It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegfright.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around.
This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
You need to be prepared to tell the judge that your children need to have certain things done to protect their interests. The judge is going to want to know where the kids are primarily living and who they're primarily living with. The judge is also going to want to know what you and the child's other parent have been doing about access and visitation.
Private attorney Sandra Bowen tells you how to prepare your own case to present to a judge in the Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court. And we answer whether the landlord or the tenant has to pay the cost of bed bug and other pest control during this week's question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 58, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. A settlement agreement will end the Social Security Administration's policy of denying or suspending benefits based on the mere existence of an outstanding arrest warrant. A nationwide class action lawsuit challenged enforcement of a narrowly drawn provision of the Social Security Act to prevent people from using benefits to flee from arrest. Rather than figuring out who actually was fleeing, SSA used a computer dragnet that matched names in a warrant database to those at SSA. Many matches and automatic benefit suspensions involved false or unproven allegations, minor infractions, or long-dead arrest warrants. People losing benefits were routinely and inaccurately told by SSA staff they could not appeal decisions. Under the agreement, SSA has stopped suspending or denying benefits due to the mere existence of a warrant, unless the warrant is issued in a criminal proceeding on a charge, such as flight or escape. 80,000 people affected since 2007 will receive more than $500 million in benefits without having to refile, and another 200,000 people will receive benefits if they refile within 6 months of receiving a notice. In other news, as a result of a lawsuit, the Virginia Municipal League has issued a newsletter to law enforcement about what police should do when called to a disputed auto repossession. The newsletter reports that, quote, a creditor may repossess an auto if the repossession proceeds without a breach of the peace. If, however, the party from whom the auto is being repossessed objects and the repossession is in progress or has not been completed, then the creditor or the company hired by the creditor must cease in the repossession. Situations may arise where it is unclear whether or not the repossession has been completed. A completed repossession is generally apparent when the vehicle has been secured to a tow truck or other transportation and physically moved away from the premises at which the repossession occurred. End of quote. The newsletter goes on to note that when confronted with a repossession in progress, accompanied by a party objecting to the repossession, and a creditor or tow company is without a valid judicial process, an officer should direct the creditor or tow company to cease and desist the repossession at that time, and secure the necessary court order. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is spousal support. Spousal support, also known as alimony, is money paid from a husband to a wife or from a wife to a husband when they are separated or divorced. It can either be voluntarily paid or ordered by a court. Unlike child support, spouse support is not automatically owed. It depends on many factors, such as how long your marriage has lasted and the contributions, both monetary and non-monetary, of each of you to your marriage. Virginia is not a palimony state. Unmarried people who live with each other, even for many years, do not owe each other any duty of support when they separate. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and spousal support is this week's legal term of the week.
It's time for this week's question and answer. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Tell us your name and where you're from.
Yes, my name is Jerome Brown, and I'm from Richmond, Virginia.
Thank you for being on the show. What question do we have this week?
Well, I have a question. I've worked for a company called Weinstein, and I was asked to go in and do some work in an apartment, and unbeknownst to me, that the apartment was it was bed bug infested, and my employers never even let me know that it was infested. I entered into this apartment, laid my jacket down, and began to do my work. Once I noticed these red bugs crawling all around the walls, and it was a numerous amounts of them. When I questioned the resident, what are these bugs? And they're bed bugs? And he said, yeah, they were bed bugs. And at that time, I became extremely distraught. I mean, my employer didn't even inform me of the type of situation that I was walking into. And it bothered me. I was wondering, did I have a legal right to know if me and my family health is in jeopardy about entering into an infestation of that nature?
Just a question or two more, and then I can answer this. Which apartment complex was this, and when did this happen?
The apartment complex was Aiden Park, and I believe it's off of Belt Boulevard on the south side of Richmond. And it happened in around February of 2008.
Okay, that raises a lot of interesting questions. The first is whether the employer has a duty to warn you of what you're walking into. I don't really think they do. I mean, if you're a maintenance person, you're working for an apartment complex, I think bed bugs, pests, and other things are probably an expected hazard of the job. However, I think that what you should have done in that situation and what people in that situation ought to do is to report it to the City of Richmond Health Department. Because this bed bug infestation has obviously been around for a long time. You noticed it in February of 2008. Channel 12 News, Channel 12 on your side, just did several pieces on that in August 2009, and the infestation is still there. And there is a major controversy between the management and the tenants as to who's responsible to pay to get the infestation removed. The management actually sent a letter to a number of tenants in August saying, and I quote from the letter, "The cost of treatment will be added to your account in the amount of $500. Now, that's not in the lease, and that's not in the Virginia Residential Landlord-Tenant Act. In fact, the way the act is written, if a problem is the tenant's fault, well, then clearly the tenant pays, like they break a window, even if it's accidental. But if the problem is the landlord's fault or is the nobody's fault, or you can't determine whose fault it is, the tenant does not have to pay, the landlord pays. Now, in your situation, you know, you're an employee, so your rights are probably not as great as those of tenants under the Virginia Residential Landlord-Tenant Act. But if, in fact, your jacket was destroyed by bed bugs, and if the landlord knew of the bed bugs and didn't warn you about it, then I think that that would raise a level of carelessness or negligence or failure to inform that would at least entitle you to get the cost of the jacket back, and you could file a lawsuit on your own by yourself without an attorney in the small claims division of the General District Court seeking the cost of the jacket.
Okay, well, I thank you, and that was very informative.
Thank you for being on the show. We're here at the law offices of Coates and Davenport, and we're speaking with Sandra Bowen, who's practiced law for 30 years and family law for the past 20 years. Welcome to the show, Sandy.
Thank you.
We're talking today about how to best present your own case in the Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court. Now, let's assume that somebody has filed their petition or their motion, whether it's child custody or child visitation, child support, spousal support, protective order, something like that. When are they going to get a hearing, and what do they need to do to prepare for that hearing?
Okay. Most times the hearing for things that aren't emergencies, and certainly protective orders are on a whole different track, but for your basic common case, between the time you file and the time you actually get into court, you're looking at a span of about 4 to 6 weeks. And then you have to know that the very first time you're going to go to court, that's really like a status check with the judge. You have about 10 minutes worth of time to let the judge know why you're there and what you want the court to do for you. If the case is contested, if the other side, in other words, objects or doesn't agree with that outcome, then the case will be set over for a trial date on the court's contested docket. Sometimes those dates aren't available for 2 months or more. It just depends upon what jurisdiction that you're in.
So let's talk about that first hearing, that status check. Let's say you've got a case coming up. What should you bring to court with you for that first hearing, that status check? What should you be prepared to say? And I guess maybe equally importantly, what should you be prepared not to say?
Sure. First of all, you've already filed your motion asking for the court to either determine a child's custody and visitation, or you're asking the court to make a change of a child's custody or visitation. So the first thing you need to tell the judge is, what's different? What's different now from the last time the court entered an order? That's if you're looking for a change. If you're starting right from the beginning or get-go, you need to be prepared to tell the judge that your children need to have certain things done to protect their interests. The judge is going to want to know where the kids are primarily living and who they're primarily living with. The judge is also going to want to know what you and the child's other parent have been doing about access and visitation. And if you've got a system that's working pretty well, the judge may enter a preliminary order that just formalizes that status quo that you've been living, and then set the trial over for a contested matter on issues that might be more difficult. But I tell folks in every instance, when they're representing themselves, when you walk in that courtroom, it can be a time of stress. It can make the most confident person nervous. So be prepared to tell the judge why you're there. For example, we've been separated for 2 months now, Your Honor, and we need to have our children's custody decided because I need custody papers to enroll a child in school. That's a fairly common example of how you might express to the judge what it is you want the judge to do and why you're there. I tell people, make a 3x5 card or a 5x7 card, and on that card write down three of the most important things you want the judge to know. And these are your reasons for having a certain outcome or the actual outcome that you want from the judge. And that way, if you've got your 3x5 card or 5x7 card in your hand, you're not going to forget to say something that's really important while you're there.
Now, this is not a knock on the juvenile and domestic relations court judges at all, but these are very high-volume courts.
Oh,
and
sure.
The judge really, I think it's fair to say, probably has no idea who you are, why you're there, and the time your case is called. Is that the first time the judge has really seen that file?
Absolutely. And all you have to do is look around in the waiting area, and you can see the numbers of people that are there. That's just one day. And on any given morning, a court can have heard from 7, 8, 9, 10 families like yours looking for help to resolve things. So the judge has no idea what's going to be walking through that door with the next case that's called. And that's why it's really important that you be prepared with your most important points when you walk in the room.
And not tell the judge your whole life story or the whole life story of your marriage or anything of that nature.
That's right. And they're real not interested in tons of details about what happened and a timeline of who said what to who. And, you know, sometimes in conversation with maybe a friend or family member, somebody might use a whole lot of pronouns, like he said this to him and then she said that. All of that's very confusing to a judge who's hearing you now, the 7th or 8th case of the morning. It's better for you to be ready to use names and keep your focus on the most important points that you want to make. The things that interest judge the most are things that concern your children's safety, any special needs your children might have. If you have an asthmatic child who needs to stay away from mold or tobacco smoke, for example, a judge would be interested in that. If the other parent is somebody who maybe has some drunk driving convictions in their very recent past, a judge is going to want to know about that. Those are examples of things that can affect the child's safety, and courts are very interested in hearing from you because they can enter orders that might restrict alcohol consumption before and while the child is there visiting. They can enter orders that can restrict people from driving children. They can also impose orders that require children to be properly restrained in car seats or other sorts of restraint devices in automobiles if these are concerns that affect the child's safety.
So I gather your advice is primarily look at the big issues, the really important health, safety, education issues, and really don't sweat the small stuff.
That's right. This is not the time to let the judge know that when the kids are there, they're sleeping on a sofa as opposed to a bed. The judge is going to want to know that when the children are in the other parent's home, they're safe and they're well cared for, and there are not a lot of strangers around. So if you've separated and your other spouse has moved into a home and is sharing it maybe with roommates, well, that's something that would be of interest to the judge. But if they've moved into their parents' home and now everybody's rearranged in the house so that there's a place for everybody to sleep and it's not ideal, the children may not have a room of their own, the court wants to know about things like that, but they're not as important as issues about drug or alcohol use and criminal past maybe that the parents might have. But certainly, who else lives in the home is of interest to the judge. I think another thing that's important for the court to know at the very outset of a situation is how well you all are cooperating with each other to manage things that are important about the children. Because if you don't have access by telephone, if you don't have access for conversation purposes with the other parent, a judge is going to be concerned about that, and they're going to want to make sure that during visitations or visitation exchanges, each of you have means to contact the other. So I think of all of, you know, there's a code section, Marty, it's 20-124.3, and anybody can find these by looking on the internet. You just have to put in your search engine, Virginia Code, and when you get to the Virginia Code, put in this section, 20-124.3. In fact, I give all my clients copies of that code section, and it's the laundry list of factors that courts have to consider when making decisions about what's best for the children. And I think of all of those factors, two of the most important are ability for parents to cooperate with each other to make decisions about their children, and then the ability each parent has to accurately assess what the needs of the child are and meet those needs.
Do you have any thoughts on whether a person should ask the judge to have a guardian ad litem appointed to look after the best interests of the child?
Well, first of all, it's real important that people understand who these guardian ad litems are. They're lawyers who have been specifically schooled and educated and experienced in handling custody issues and dealing with children. And these lawyers' names are on a list that has been issued by the Supreme Court of Virginia as being capable and qualified and willing to serve. Their job is to be an attorney for your child. And in the scope of their job, they're to let the court know what the reasonable preferences of your children are with regard to whatever it is you're there for, custody or visitation. They handle themselves in the courtroom just like they're a lawyer. They ask questions of witnesses. They can bring witnesses to court. They can put on evidence. They can be very helpful to the court, because just like your lawyer, if you have one, or you, if you're acting on your own, are going to get to argue to the judge at the end of the case what you think the best outcome is, this guardian is going to be able to do that too. And sometimes it's just a matter of having two people in the courtroom who think that the outcome ought to be the same, and sometimes the judge is just persuaded by that. It's like two against one, and the judge can be persuaded by what the guardian has to say. I think that any time there's an allegation of any kind of substance abuse, alcohol abuse, any time there's issues of DUI convictions, any time there are issues of people not having a stable life, like moving to a lot of different residences where they're sharing a home with family members or friends, anytime the children have special needs, health needs, even something as simple as asthma, but especially things like learning disabilities where your child might have an IEP or a 504 plan in place, very often a guardian can be extremely helpful in situations like that in helping come up with a solution that's going to work for the family and work for the children, and really best advocating for the children and what's in their best interest. So it's a rare time that I ever think a guardian is not worth having in a case, but people have to watch out because the guardian is entitled to get paid for what they do, and somebody's got to pay for that. And the court will give each of the parents a financial responsibility form to fill out. It's really just a questionnaire about what you make at your job and what your assets might be and what your ability is to pay for this guardian. And at the end of the case, and only at the end of the case, can the guardian's fees be assessed by the judge against either party. And there's really no rule that says it all has to be against one or all against the other. And very often the court will say only part has to be paid by the parties. So it's just something to watch out for. If a guardian is appointed to the case, there just might be a cost associated with it.
We have been speaking with Sandy Bowen, a family law attorney with the firm of Coates and Davenport here in the near west end of Henrico County. Thank you so much for being on the program, Sandy.
Thank you very much.
This week's top three tips are about mediation. The first tip is that mediation is when a trained outside person helps disagreeing parties talk to each other. It's up to the judge whether to refer a case for mediation, and if referred, the parties don't have to pay for mediation. The second tip is that a mediator tries to understand the dispute and help the parties solve it. A mediator doesn't decide anything or force a solution. Most often, mediation is used in consumer and family law cases. Usually, mediation is not used when there has been domestic violence or family abuse. The third tip is that if an agreement is not reached by mediation, the judge will hear the case. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King. And for this week, that's our top three tips about mediation.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1210 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. In these days of tightening credit, protecting your credit report is more important now than ever. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when our guest, consumer protection attorney Jason Crumbine, explains who keeps credit reports, who gets to look at them, and how to protect your credit report using the protections of the Fair Credit Reporting Act. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Regler.
My Lord.